everyone listening to Round Guys Radio Network. Real quick, why don't you sign up for our newsletter? Whenever we have a new episode, we have a newsletter release. The only time we push one out, go over to roundguysbrewery.com/RGR. Thank you for listening.
Hey, welcome to the Original Slacker podcast presented by Round Guys Brewing Company. Today we have Joe Jack Talcum, formerly of the Dead Milkmen and a myriad of other bands. We have a great talk, so stay with us. How you doing, man?
Pretty good, thanks.
You doing good? Yeah, it's another nice early morning up here in Lansdale, like 10 a.m.
Yeah, with the coffee.
Our guest is barely awake and barely living after he played all night last night. Joe, how's life in the punk scene in Philadelphia right now?
Oh, it's churning along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anyone out there that you really pay attention to that you're like, man, I love these guys?
In Philadelphia, a band that I really like, they've been around, I don't know, maybe 10 years, I don't know, just released an LP, a new one, and they're called the Tough Shits.
I love the name. Yeah.
Great name, great band, they're fun, they're rock and roll, and they're punk all at once.
Life is good.
Tough Shits. Fun times, yeah.
Yeah, well, hey, at least it's descriptive, right? It's right to the point. Yeah. So you've been doing this for quite a while, man.
Longer than I can remember.
Yeah, this is pretty impressive. So how far back can you remember?
I remember meeting Rodney in high school at lunch. I'm not sure what happened, but I thought this guy is crazy and he's funny.
Yeah, and that's when you guys started.
We started
coming up with this great idea. This.
Yeah, well, I didn't have the idea with Rodney. I had it with my next-door neighbor. So we made a tape when we were in high school and called it The Dead Milkmen. And we recorded it the very last day of 1979. So we called it So Long 70s.
And
It was our little kind of folk-punk parody. But Garth brought the tape to school and handed it to Rodney to listen to. And then Rodney wanted to be in on the next time we did a recording, and so he was. He brought his banjo and his wit and his, rhyming skills.
Right. I think that's
that's when it was born, really.
That's a defining feature.
In my bedroom with a tape recorder with Garth and Rodney.
Yeah, man. I mean, well, you kind of did what so many other high school kids do,
Yeah. We were making fun for ourselves.
Yeah.
In what otherwise would be a boring world before the days of the internet. I mean, people still do that. Rodney and I found Dave through a college friend of mine. Dave was my friend Joe's brother.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also found Dean.
And a college friend is, you're at Temple.
That's right, Temple.
And where was, and you grew up in Chester County, is that where you?
Yeah.
What school was that?
Coatesville. They call it Cash. Coatesville Area Senior High.
Okay, well, all right, right on. I mean, that's a typical story. The Dead Milkmen became like this icon in Philadelphia, this underground icon.
A dunk,
yeah.
But it happened.
And I think a lot of that, when you're talking about Rodney being able to rhyme and everything, the music didn't take itself seriously.
Uh-uh.
Some of the most fun music you can have out there.
Right. Well, from the very get-go, the idea was that it was comedy.
It really came off like comedy. I think also a lot of the Milkmen side, a lot of it didn't, it reflected the, you maybe due to comedy, like you think of like the experience of Ween out there where it's much more of a reflection of common culture. It's just laughing at it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you're bringing in different aspects of the current culture and throwing it into your music and creating just, it's art, but it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we had a lot of parody in the very beginning.
Yeah. Okay. The name Dead Milkmen, where did that name come from?
I just thought it up because I wanted to, I'd heard of the Dead Boys, and I thought that was a pretty damn good punk name.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted something like that, but also something that was goofy and kind of bucolic. Milkmen are usually found in cities, I guess, too. But we had milkmen back in, back in Chester County when I was growing up, a deliverer of milk.
In Coatesville?
Yeah.
Man,
They delivered the glass milk, and they had the little steel canisters.
I guess you're kind of close to the farms out there, so...
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, cities had milkmen, but...
Wow.
Coatesville was a city.
I didn't know.
But even Wagontown, where I grew up, had a deliverer of milk. Referred to as a milkman. Also delivered eggs. So I thought it worked as an okay punk band. For the idea of the fake backstory of the milkman was that it was this guy named Jack Talcum, who was a son of a Jack Talcum Jr., the son of a famous folk musician,
yeah.
Jack Talcum. So it's Jack Talcum Jr. Also following in his father's footsteps, being a folk musician, but wanting to change or cross over into punk, so he fronts this punk band, or he infiltrates a punk band and starts to front them. So it's
infiltrates
Shaq Tuckum Jr. and the Dead Milkman. That was the backstory behind the.
I love the fact
the first tape came along.
I love the fact that you guys. There's a parallel here that I kept thinking about that goes to Trey and Fish, and how they had this goofy, almost nerd-like obsession with the minuscule stories that they want to make up for the band.
Yeah.
And you guys
did Rodney and Garth and I.
Yeah, and this is great. This is what I love hearing. It built the foundation for who you're going to be, and also built the foundation for who's going to listen to you.
You know, I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah, well, who would? Right? You're just having a good time. You're just getting creative with it. Round Guys Brewery, you can find out more about all the events we have down here at the Underground, roundguysbrewery.com, undergroundlansdale.com, or check out our eating establishments at the Brew Pub across the street and at the Glenside Ale House, glensidealehouse.com. So the milkmen come out and you guys are playing around. Were you guys really taking it seriously? Were you looking at like, hey, this is fun to do? Do I know? Were you, first off, you're in college and when to start really moving, right? You had to band, you Rodney,
Yeah, it was my third year in college, Dean, when we became a real band that started playing shows.
Right, and you guys are playing around the city. Were you guys taking it seriously? Was it more of a hobby? What?
We were both. Dave probably was the person that most took it seriously. He was 6 years older than us. Rodney and Dean and I are all within a year of each other in age. Dave was born in 56, so he was kind of the adult experienced person. Mm-hmm. And also, he was the only one of us who was a true punk, like into punk in the late 70s when it was
right.
A thing. So to us, he had this knowledge that we didn't have. And remember, this is before the internet when mm-hmm. you can look up anything.
Exactly, yeah.
So we fed off that. But he also was the person in my mind who said, you really can make a go of this. And this is, he booked shows. He made contacts and got us more shows than anybody else in the band. His brother went to college at Temple with me.
Mm-hmm.
I became friends with his brother Joe. I told Joe one evening that what I really wanted to do with my life was be in a band, and I had all these songs, and we were looking for, and I told him about Rodney, and we were looking for a bass player, and he said, well, it just so happens that my brother plays bass. Maybe you should meet him. So he invited his brother over to the dorms at Temple, and I met him, and we wrote a song that very same day together, and that was that. We became really good friends.
Things started moving forward.
Yeah.
And over the upcoming 5-6 years, you guys started getting out on the national scene.
It's true. We booked a tour basically by contacts we found in the fanzine called Maximum Rock and Roll.
Okay.
In the summer, we booked it for the summer of 1985 to coincide with when our first album would be released, Big Lizard in My Backyard. Mm-hmm. And that tour was quite an experience. Half the show, maybe 40% of the shows ended up not happening, but we didn't have ways to keep calling, contacting people to see what was.
They just not.
We would just show up and say, oh, well, this show is not going to happen. This venue got closed, or sorry,
oh, wow.
We couldn't. But the other 60% of the shows did happen.
So you guys are going from city to city, kind of without any knowledge if there's going to be a show. if anyone cares about your music, if there's a place for you.
Right, right. That's the first tour.
First tour.
But halfway through that tour, our album started getting, the song Bitchin' Camaro from our album started getting played on college radio stations, and we started to see the effect on the way back.
And college radio is like the equivalent of, I guess, Spotify or what have you. Back in the day.
It was like having a minor hit, I guess.
Yeah.
And we saw the effects of it. It started drawing people. People knew that song, and they wanted to come see the band play, so that helped us out. And things rapidly started coming together for us. So that first tour was a big money loser. When we got back home, we decided Dave Reckner, the guy who came along with us to help us out, we decided he was going to be our manager. So we made him our manager, and he started booking the shows for us. We started turning around and having profitable tours soon after that. I mean, I remember we did a tour of New England, and it was really good.
And then when did you guys go on MTV?
The very first time that we were shown on MTV was for a video we did for our second album called The Thing That Only Eats Hippies. And there used to be a program that predated 120 Minutes. I can't remember what it was called now, but it was in the same time slot, the late Sunday night thing.
Right.
And they showed it.
How was that?
Maybe once or twice.
What was that like?
It was pretty exciting.
Did you guys get a VHS?
I kind of remember. No, there was no cable in Philadelphia at the time. There was no such thing as cable TV. So they didn't have MTV, but we went to the suburbs to Rodney's parents' house who had cable.
The city of Philadelphia had no cable. And it's,
correct.
And I guess
the city of Philadelphia didn't have cable as far as I remember.
Because
it was some kind of litigation or whatever they
because
had.
Because it was monopolies at that time.
Monopolies.
Right, yeah.
It was, and they had, the city developed, if I remember correctly, eventually came up with a plan to divide the city in four pieces, and they let four different cable companies. Well, eventually they all became bought by Comcast anyway.
Yeah, Comcast, right.
But that's how cable started in Philadelphia.
So you had to go to Delaware County.
We had to go to Chester County, actually.
Or Chester County.
Okay. Or Delaware County as well, because we also watched MTV in Ridley Park at Dave's parents' house. I remember many hours fast sitting glued to the TV, like, what the hell is this? And you never knew what was going to come up next.
Yeah.
I saw some crazy David Bowie videos.
Right. Yeah, that's... That had
some
to be
Adam
something.
And the Ants.
Amazing. The thrill of everything at that moment had to be just... I had to more than make up for sleeping on a couch in Irvine for 2 weeks. Did you guys know where you want to take it? Or was it just, let's just keep rolling with it as far as we can go and just see,
yeah,
surf this
wave,
right?
I didn't really know myself. I thought that was a good goal, make an album, see the country, maybe do something else. But also, I remember having a conversation with Dave Reckner, the manager, between the first and second album, him saying, no, I think you can get a lot more out of this one and stick with it, because I was saying, I don't know if I want to keep doing this thing.
Mm-hmm. And you stuck with it.
I did.
You guys were pumping out albums about every year and a half at that point, right? It just kept coming out. I guess it was contractual,
yeah, every year.
Every year. And that was contractual probably, right?
The thing that we signed with Fever was for four albums.
Problems, right.
And they were the ones that got to decide whether the next album would happen or not.
Props. If you want to learn more about the original Slacker, why don't you check us out online at facebook.com/roundguysradio. Search for us on Spotify, Round Guys Brewing Company. You can also find out more about the podcast by going to Apple Podcasts and Google Play. You can search Original Slacker Podcast anywhere great podcasts are found, or Google, and you'll find us right there. Today we have Joe Jack Talcum, formerly of the Dead Milkmen and a myriad of other bands. We have a great talk, so stay with us. Was there a point where there's a little malaise in the group, trying to figure out where the music's going to go, trying to figure out maybe the inspiration or...
I remember things just kind of naturally happened for the first four or five albums, we just kind of fell into a pattern.
Right.
I know Rodney's expressed, in hindsight, maybe some regret over how fast things happened, and maybe he's not as proud of the songs as he wanted to be. But personally, I think he did I like what we ended up doing, and we never really overwrote like a lot of bands do. We used almost everything that we demoed, but at the same time, there were a lot of songs that got started that never got finished.
How did the process go for you guys?
It was multifaceted. A lot of, in the early days, songs were written on, lyrics were written on paper by Rodney and given to me. I would put music to the things that I could, that I felt I could do. So in just in that process, there were lots of songs, I don't know where they are anymore, lyrics that never got touched for as far as music goes. But I would sit down and say, oh, this sounds like a good song. And sometimes I would work it on my own, and sometimes I'd be with Dave, because he lived with me for a while, and we would work together on a song. For example, like Beach Party of Vietnam came in the mail with some other lyrics, and looked at that and said, oh, I have a riff that I've been working on. I think it really would work with this song, like just like that. And he'd start playing this riff, and I said, yeah, I can see how this could work. So,
right.
And I said, well, that's a riff, but we need another chord here. And I just had one chord. His riff was in D. And I said, let's play G here. And that was almost the whole song. So simple. But that's how we did it.
Yeah.
And then we recorded that and sent a recording to Rodney, I guess for his approval or whatever.
Were you guys all living in different parts?
Well, he lived in Westchester because he was going to school there at Westchester University. And I lived in Manayunk because I was going to school. And that's where Dave and I lived. I was going to school at Temple.
And was Dean around?
Dean wasn't part of the group yet.
Okay.
Dave also played drums. So when we did recordings and we had access to a drum, I forget where the drum kit came from, but it was there. And I think it was Rodney's drums, actually, because Rodney brought a drum kit.
Right.
That's right. So Dave played Rodney's drum kit in Manayunk, and I would record Dave playing drums and me playing guitar. And then we'd play that playback, and then on another tape machine, Dave would play bass while I sang.
Wow.
So that's how we made those demos.
These demos.
But we called them, I'd call them demos now, but back then they were the tapes that we made for the fictional band, The Dead Milkmen. With a story, we would make a newsletter that would define the tapes that came out as albums.
This is great. Any
in the fake world.
Any budding musicians listening, this is a phenomenal approach to how you can really differentiate yourself. The music, so the turnaround time to make a song via demo tapes, was that like a month? Because you have to mail it back and forth?
Maybe a month, a month and a half.
Wow. So I want to speed things up a little bit. So who is the original label you're with?
Fever Records. So that's a Philadelphia label. We had nothing to do with Enigma, except that Enigma did what they called a P&D, or pressing and distribution deal, for Fever Records. So we were technically signed to Fever Records, but Enigma was the people that promoted. They were the people that actually did the promotion and everything.
Right.
So we dealt with Enigma in a way, but it was theoretically through Fever as the rights holder. That was for the first four albums. The fourth album is Beelzebub. So after the fourth album, we were free agents, and then we signed directly to Enigma for the album Metaphysical Graffiti and got a significant advance for that, which we didn't. Fever's a small thing, and we were on a low, low budget.
And so the 7 years down the road, 90s come about, I feel like everything changes in the world in the 90s. So you had, the fall of the wall, you had Eastern Bloc is now, Eastern Bloc is now gone. Music has totally changed. What people do for fun is changing, right? Like you have, over those 4 years from like 88 to 92, there's a lot of stuff going on. How are you guys transitioning in that time?
Well, Enigma went under. They went bankrupt or whatever. While we were touring for Metaphysical Graffiti, the album that was on Enigma. So we suddenly found ourselves without a label and not sure of which direction we were going to go. So but I do remember clearly having a meeting with all four of us and Dave Reckner, our manager, and Rodney bringing up in the meeting that he didn't want us to be considered a wacky, crazy band anymore, which is probably something he didn't want us to be in the first place. But that's how we were getting perceived and marketed, because we were on tour. We were doing these morning zoos. They were morning zoo type drive time radio shows on commercial radio. Mm-hmm. In various markets around the country. So we were waking up rather early after having late night shows, doing just these like crazy today. Things. Like today, except this is not a morning zoo. This isn't one of those wacky, crazy things. Right. And I think that irritated us quite a bit, and that we didn't want that to be our...
Yeah. Your shtick.
Shtick or persona for the band.
Yeah.
So we made a conscious effort, if you will, to avoid any of that in the future music.
Did you see a change in your fan base as you start going through the 90s now? You guys are older. Your fans, do they
it
still...
It seemed like, to me, the fan base was getting younger and younger.
Yeah.
Like, kids that I wouldn't think would even go to a show or come into shows at, like, age 12 or 13.
And did they know the Dead Milkmen? Was it something that...
Somehow they did, yeah.
Okay. Did their parents impart that, or...?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So the year's 1993, to paint the picture. We just finished one leg of a tour. We had another one that would continue in 94. So this, we're taking our winter break, and Dean calls a meeting and says, guys, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to go back to school and learn web design. I really like this computer thing. He did all of our album covers too. A week later, Rodney said, you know what? I don't want to continue this anymore either. I'd like to go back to school, blah, blah, blah. I personally stayed involved in music as did Rodney and Dean, really, as a side thing, with a band I had called Touch Me Zoo, and another band that formed in the wake of Touch Me Zoo called The Town Managers. And
were those other two still local?
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys are all still around.
And Butterfly Joe, which is a band that the guy from the Big Mess Orchestra, the leader of that, put together with some of the Big Mess people and Dean to play songs that I had recorded and distributed as
right.
What I back then called Joe Jack Talcum, and then Jasper Thread, and then Butterfly Fairweather Tapes.
And at this point, you're playing your own... individual acts, you know, like you mentioned.
Yeah, and Rodney did a sort of a Celtic folk band called Burn Witch Burn.
That's awesome. So today I have Henchman. It's actually a Imperial Brown. You know what I notice in there is the alcohol warming, and there's a definite sweetness in the back from that alcohol. Henchman actually was a beer that we made here by one of our sales rep. He came up with this beer, and we had a number of tries at it, and I believe this is the first one where we didn't mess it up and have to drain it. So kudos to the guys over in the brewery. Good work. When you transitioned away from Milkmen, what, like, did you want to differentiate your sound? Did you want to keep it the same? Like, was there a sound that was true to you?
Yeah, in a way. But I always feel like I was and am a collaborator. So I have my songs, and I still made tapes that I felt were just personal solo things, apart from things that I would write with the guy Seven that was in the band Touch Me Zoo, or things I would write with Chris, or write with Brian that would be for the band The Town Managers. Mm. And a lot of the stuff that's The Town Managers has the imprint of Chris. Chris, he went by the name Chris Peelout eventually, and we formed a band together called The Low Budgets after Brian decided to leave The Town Managers. And the stuff I did with Seven had imprint of the unique way of playing that Seven brought to that. So Some of their similarities and some differences because of that.
I like Midnight. What?
I Think Like Midnight.
I Think Like Midnight.
Mm-hmm.
What would you characterize that band to be?
Well, it's instrumental music. I kind of think it is of his life soundtrack. The core of that is Andy Chelfin. He writes the bulk of the material, and it's guitar-based. But the band also has keyboards in it, and I play keyboards. I was asked to play keyboards after the band was already formed and after they already made one album. And it's really Dean and Andy's project.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that came up with the band. They both loved a now-defunct instrumental band that was around in the 80s called Pell Mell. And they wanted to style themselves or make a recording that could be called the Lost Pell Mell album. And that was the inspiration for the first album, Worm. The first album that they released.
Tiny Towns, the song.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the inspiration coming from that?
This is a song where the music came first, and I had no lyrics for it at all. I just had this. I had all the parts, and I presented it to the band in practice. And Rodney said, "Oh, I can put words to that." And pretty instantaneously, he had the words. So the inspiration lyrically came from Rodney.
Yeah.
And you have to ask him. I don't know.
Have to ask him. So next time I see Rodney. Yeah. Good man. This is always fun to. It's fun to chat with people who've been around doing this, because you see how everything's changed. You have life stories. In the 90s, did you guys have families? Any of you guys?
In the 90s,
yeah.
Dean, another reason Dean wanted to not tour, be in the band, to exist and to make a living, we had to tour more than half the year. Mm-hmm. We weren't a band that didn't make our money through record sales, believe it or not. We would have a cult following at best.
Right. You're probably more.
So he wanted to raise. He did want to raise a family, and he realized it would be best to be in one spot to do that.
Yeah.
So he's the one that had a kid. Rodney also got married in '94 after the band split up, but he had no children.
And then Dave, unfortunately, had passed.
Yeah. He also never got married and had children. I never did either.
Yeah. Dogs.
Nope. Nothing.
No dogs, man. Cats?
No.
Joe, thank you so much for coming down to the Underground for another great recording we have down here.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Where can people find out what you're doing right now?
I have a website called jacktalcum.com, and I have a Facebook page, believe it or not, which is, I forget, Real Joe Jack Talcum, I think.
That's great.
Because it's me. And it's not a fan putting it out. I have a Instagram, which is under joe.gennaro. I don't know if that tells you what I'm... Sometimes I explain what I'm doing. You can see visually.
Love it. Great. Thanks so much for coming
down.
Okay,
thank you.
And yeah, thank you.